righty, Zach Gilb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Evan Washburn, NFL on CBS, going to join us coming up 40 minutes from now. By the way, the Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. How about Mariner starter Luis Castillo? He tossed 7 innings of one-run ball while striking out 9 in Seattle's 14-2 victory over the White Sox on Monday. Castillo won his 10th game of the season as the Mariners now have a 1-game lead over the Blue Jays for the final wild card berth. Hickey, I don't know where you stand on this one, but I said it right at the All-Star break. Until someone takes down the Astros, I still believe that the Astros are going to get to the World Series. And I said this last night, and I'll say it again. With that being said, if the Mariners get in with their top three in their rotation, they're going to be a tough out. And the Mariners are a team just like last year. They got hot, get a little bit more experience. This year, they're getting hot at the right time. This is a baseball team right now that if they make the playoffs, and that's the big if, they get one of those wild card spots. When you have Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, and George Kirby, that's going to be one tough team. One tough team to eliminate come postseason time. And I know now we all focus on the bullpens and all that. Those three starting pitchers are all phenomenal. And a lot of teams would covet. If they get in, I'm starting to get more optimistic by the day about the Seattle Mariners. I think we had J.P. Crawford on, right? Right at the All-Star break, too. And I even said that to him. I go, if you guys get in, you're going to be a force to be reckoned with because of the three guys that are hurling the baseball at the top of the rotation. If I had to ask you right now, AL pick to go to the World Series, who's your AL pick to go to the World Series? If you had to give me two.
Two, I'll still go with the Astros. I know, not fun. I'm sorry. Second, I'll go with the Orioles. I love the Orioles. I'm buying in. Youth is there. They're playing great. Good pitching, good hitting. I'm going all in on Baltimore.
Yeah, but that owner, though, just some bad karma there. What he did with the play-by-play broadcaster, and now is already talking about how ticket prices are going to go up because it's going to be impossible to afford all the young players that they have. It's weird. The Orioles, the players are a likable story, but the owner of the team makes them a team that I'm starting to root against.
Well, he's a total clown, and I would agree. It's tough because I like this team, and they built it, we'll say, the right way. I know it's kind of tanking and it's kind of taboo, but they drafted well. They developed really well. And to their credit, kind of like the Astros, they made the most of their losses by picking great players that have now panned out well. And you're right, it's frustrating to see already in the midst of the greatest season they're having in maybe our lifetimes, like just for how promising this young season is so far, already now with the play-by-play suspension and now again already kind of pouring cold water by saying, oh, enjoy it now, fans, because guess what? When these guys, when Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman want to get paid big money, I'm too poor. Sorry, we can't do it. They're going to go somewhere else. It's pathetic. It's laughable. It's frustrating. As a non-Orioles fan, it's frustrating that this nice season is ruined by one clown.
Do you think we will get a Braves-Dodgers NLCS? Because those have been the two best teams in the NL.
I'm going to say no. Because in baseball specifically, that is where you rarely actually get the two best teams matching up in the LCS series.
And you know who's starting to look real good? And they're getting hot at the right time, and they've been playing a lot better? Philadelphia. The Phillies. I will say that we get a Braves-Dodgers NLCS. Last year, it was funky, right? You ended up getting the Padres and the Phillies, two wild card teams. I do think we will get the Braves and the Dodgers, but in baseball, anything can happen, especially when you have those short series early on. But if you don't believe the Braves and the Dodgers will be there, then I'm assuming you think one will get there. Who's then that third team that you're feeling the most confidence in?
I'm not trying to have this be a cop-out, I promise. But it's like one of those things where I never predicted the Phillies to make a run last year. So it's like it could be the Reds. Like the Reds get hot, they're a fun team. Like all of a sudden, can they ride the magic getting in? Like, would I be shocked? No, I can't be. So it's like one of those teams where it's like I hate to do it because I really hate, again, not fully committing to the answer, but I do not have a team I'm looking at and saying, oh, they're going to beat the Dodgers, they're going to be the Braves. But just seeing how baseball playoffs have been for a while now, there's always one upset primed each and every year, especially when the Dodgers are involved. They rarely truly get to where they're supposed to every year.
Well, can you finally admit, though, that the Phillies aren't a bad team? Like you told me when you were laughing, and I'm a Mets fan, but you were laughing at me when we had that conversation. It was me, you, Pete Hoffman, who works down the hall, and you guys are both still optimistic about the Mets. And I said, they still have to get over Philadelphia, one of the teams that they were looking to try to pass when you guys still thought they were in it. And I said to you guys that the Phillies are a better team than the Mets, and that's coming from a Mets fan, and you guys both laughed at me and said I was like the biggest idiot in the world. Can you finally admit that the Phillies are a good baseball team?
To the Phillies' credit, they are a good team this year.
Okay.
They have managed to make their World Series run last year, and so far have now lost all the momentum this year. Their credit.
And they got off to a bad start, just like how they got off to a bad start last year. And then they find a way to get hot at the right time. I will say this. I will be rooting against the Braves, though, this year. If I had to pick one team to not win the World Series, it was weird because the Braves a few years ago were like a likable team. But with just how much crap the Braves have talked and being a Mets fan as well. And also, like, it's Barrett Salee, really. The great college football writer who I love. I'm a big fan of Barrett Salee. But him and the cockiness about his Braves, which he should have. It makes me want to root against the Atlanta Braves. Where I should have no reason outside of just being a Mets fan. But I'm like the Braves, you look at them, you admire what they've built. And they have a great team, and they have an all-star, superstar team. But when you have that little arrogance factored into it, yeah. I'm okay if the Braves don't end up going all the way this year. It would be more than fine. Like if you could pick one team to not win the World Series this year, wouldn't it be the Braves?
This is so tough. I hate the Phillies.
Here? But the Phillies.
I despise the Phillies.
But they're a likable team this year.
I hate the Braves.
But the Phillies are a likable team this year. You have Bryce Harper, how he's playing, it's crazy. Trey Turner got off to that bad start, and they gave him a standing ovation. He starts playing a little bit better. And I even, a Mets fan, fellow Mets fan, one of my best friends, biggest Mets fan I know, even said, pains me to say it, but the Phillies are a likable team this year. Doesn't mean like he's sitting there saying go Phillies, but objectively, if you take your twisted mind out of this just for a second, outside of being a Mets fan, there's no reason to hate the Phillies this year. Really not.
I don't think I'm being biased when I say this. I don't think there's a likable thing about the Phillies.
So what makes them so unlikable?
Their being. I don't like Bryce Harper. Trey Turner's been up and down.
The guy's been playing hurt all year.
To say the least. Aaron Nola's overrated. He stinks. I cannot stand the Phillies. Cannot stand their fans. I hate the Braves. I hate their fans.
Because
I hate both teams' arrogance.
Because you're a Mets fan, though.
Well,
I'm saying if you are not a Mets fan.
I can't do that. I can't. But, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just play the game here for
I
a
I can't
second.
Play that game. I can't. I can. You will not get
just
me a national radio to say the Phillies are a redacted word.
But you can do that because I even remember when I was here, weekend overnights, and we were talking about the Washington Nationals. The Nationals, the year they won the World Series up against the Astros, were a likable team.
Oh, I'll agree with that 100%.
So you could be a likable team and you can't stand the team. Like even the year when the Braves went on that great run and won the World Series, pains me to say, the Braves were a likable team. You could despise them in terms of they're in your division. And now I don't think the Braves are a likable team. But when they won the World Series, there weren't a lot of reasons to hate the Atlanta Braves. But anyway, your World Series prediction is what? If you had to take a guess right now, who you put in the World Series?
I will say Astros, Braves, Astros win it.
Okay. I'm going Astros, Dodgers, Dodgers win it. I will take the Dodgers to win the World Series. Zach Yelp Show, CBS Sports Radio. Real quickly, I want to do this exercise here. Three teams that need to be talked about more in the NFL. And what I mean by this is I'm going to give you a team and they're not a lock to make the postseason. Or it's teams that we don't really talk about a lot. That's going to be the definition here. So, like, three teams that need to be talked about more. You know who your teams are that are pretty much a lock to make the postseason. And teams that are maybe flying under the radar before we start the season. I'll give you three here. I think the Steelers are flying under the radar. Not a lock to make the playoffs whatsoever. The AFC is loaded. But their skill position players are better than what people give them credit for. Pat Freiermuth is a really good tight end. Najee Harris had two successful years in the NFL. I like George Pickens a lot. And Kenny Pickett, we got to see if he could take that next step this year. And defensively, they were banged up a year ago. I think the Steelers are a team with Tomlin as a coach. They're always going to be in it. We should be talking about them more. The next team I'll give you, the Seattle Seahawks. I think a lot of people are like Hickey, where they look at the Seahawks and they go, oh, easy to say Geno Smith won't repeat what he did a year ago. That NFC stinks. Outside of Philadelphia and San Francisco, you can't really feel confident about any of the teams in the NFC in terms of being a Super Bowl contender. But I look at the Seahawks, and I know Jackson Smith and Jigba just got surgery. We'll see when he comes back. You still have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. You got the two young running backs in that backfield. You got a good, young, up-and-coming secondary. That Seattle team is a team that I don't think we're really talking about them a lot because we gave them so much praise last year, where people just go, okay, you had that one good year without Russell Wilson. Now you're going to be able to do it again. And then finally, my third team here, teams that need to be just talked about a little bit more. I'm not even telling you any of these teams are going to be great. The Washington Commanders. The Bieniemy stuff, I think, let a lot of steam out of that engine in terms of some positive momentum that was occurring. It could be overblown. I don't get what Ron Rivera was doing. It was very stupid, if you ask me. It was kind of like Sean McDermott throwing more gasoline on the fire with the Stephon Diggs situation. But you look at that roster, I know Terry McLaurin's now dealing with turf toe, but if he's able to get through that, he's great. You got Jahan Dotson. I like Brian Robinson Jr. now going to be there, thankfully, for a full season. That front seven had a bad year last year, but there's a lot of talent there. If Sam Howell could just be average in that NFC, they could swap places with the Giants, where last year the Giants were the third team to get in from the NFC East, and it was by a very close margin. Remember, you had those two games that they were battling out, Commanders and the Giants. That is, to me, a team in the Commanders that the only reason we talked about them this offseason was because Daniel Snyder sold the team to Josh Harris, and you had the Ron Rivera, Eric Bieniemy player hole situation. Those three teams are just teams that I give you that I think we should talk about a little bit more. And for the Commanders and Steelers, don't be surprised they make the playoffs this year. And for the Seahawks, I've been saying this all offseason long, they could be the third best team in the NFC. Hickey, who are the three teams in the NFL? Not locks to make the playoffs. Teams that you think aren't getting talked about enough.
I would say the Cleveland Browns, a lot of talent on that roster. Obviously, a lot hinges on how Deshaun Watson plays, but the pieces are there where, kind of going back to the opening segment, not a lot of excuses for Deshaun Watson if they don't play well and aren't in the playoff conversation, let alone make the playoffs. You got what you need for the most part there to at least be in the mix bare minimum. That's one.
Hold on. Let me just, I'll comment on each one.
Sure.
The Browns, the one thing that concerns me is Kevin Stefanski knows he's coaching for his job. He needs to make Deshaun Watson happy because that organization's going to side with Deshaun Watson over Kevin Stefanski. The most consistent player on the Browns offense recently has been Nick Chubb. We know what Deshaun Watson can be if he knocks off the rust. He was showing signs of a top seven, top five quarterback in the NFL. I just wonder how much they go away from their most consistent offensive player in Nick Chubb. Because I thought down the stretch in the six games that Watson came back, they were trying to make Deshaun Watson, and I know he's paid to do a lot, but they were going away from really what's been their bread and butter as of late. And that's being a team built off a great offensive line and Nick Chubb running the football. Now, we know Watson's going to throw the ball a ton, but I just wonder what the splits look like, and that's a concern for me. Because I think it may swing too much in Watson throwing the football more than I would like it. All right, who's your next team?
I hate to say it, the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah!
They are a team that I don't think is going to make the playoffs, but to Mike Vrabel's credit, for all of the attrition they suffered last year, they were fighting for the division the last game of the season with Joshua Dobbs starting that game.
They were 7-3 at one point.
They were, and they lost every game after that. But they still lost their quarterback, got banged up everywhere. I mean, they still have, forget about Ryan Tannehill, they have Derrick Henry, you add DeAndre Hopkins. They got some pieces on defense. Mike Vrabel arguably is a coach who does more with less than any coach in the NFL. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but they definitely do respect, or deserve, I should say, some respect, at least being in the conversation.
Now, can you admit, like, you don't despise the Jacksonville Jaguars? Is that fair?
Not yet, no.
A team that's in your division, though. But how fun would this be?
Jonathan Taylor gets traded, the Jags make the playoffs, and then Tennessee makes the playoffs as well, and you send two teams from the AFC South and they're not Indianapolis. That'd be wonderful.
That would not be great. That would actually, well, I mean, actually, you know what? In 2023, the wins don't matter, so it's fine. Send the Titans to the playoffs.
Okay.
There you go, Mike Vrabel. My gift to you. Finally, this team, I will admit, is very top-heavy and needs Lady Luck injury-wise to go their way.
AFC or NFC?
Big time. NFC.
NFC team. And repeat what you just said.
Very top-heavy.
Very top-heavy.
Very top-heavy.
In the NFC.
One injury will derail their season.
Not a lock to make the playoffs.
Not a lock whatsoever.
Is it Kirk Cousins with the Vikings?
No.
It's not the Vikings.
No, not the Vikings.
Huh. Very top-heavy.
Could be a good, interesting team to throw in here, too. I'd probably overlook them.
You know what? The Vikings are a good one. I think they're going to win the division. Very top-heavy. Oh. I know who you're going with. Does this fit the theme of Hickey doubling down with his bad predictions from a year ago?
I guess depends on what prediction I'm referencing, because I did make a few. So possibly. Possibly.
So last year you said Baker was going to make the playoffs with the Panthers. Now you think Baker's going to make the playoffs with the Bucs.
That's right.
What was the other? You said the Broncos were going to the Super Bowl. This year you're saying they're just going to make the playoffs.
That's right. And they are not, since they're not in the NFC, not in this conversation.
Last year you said the Los Angeles Rams have the easiest path ever back to another Super Bowl, coming off a Super Bowl championship. They are top-heavy. The rest of their roster stinks, but they got three good names. Cooper Kupp deal with an injury. Stafford coming off an injury. Donald coming off an injury-plagued season. Those are the three names, right? That's the top-heavy team.
And I would include Sean McVay, too, as a very good head coach. But, yes, they are a team that was decimated by offensive line injuries last year.
Their line still stinks.
They're healthy, though. I think they're better than what they're getting credit for. They're healthy. And you have a healthy offensive line, Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Aaron Donald. There's still talent on that team, you know, with a really good head coach. But again, one injury here, one injury there, and they are totally screwed.
And
but that's
too
a team
many
they
guys
stay
there,
healthy.
One foot in, one foot out.
I don't think that's a, you know, I think it's a team that come December will be like, oh, wow, Rams are in it.
Yeah, I can't take that team seriously. Too many one foot in, one foot out guys in that organization right now. And Bobby Wagner crawling back to the Seahawks and begging to leave the Rams to go back to the Seahawks tells me everything I need to know about the Rams for this upcoming season. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Evan Washburn going to join us 20 minutes from now. News brief next.
Hi, this is Shannon Storms-Bedore, Real Housewife of Orange County and entrepreneur. When my company, Real for Real, started selling our health products online, we struggled to ship our orders out quickly and without error. But ShipStation's simple dashboard made it easy to manage orders from every marketplace. Plus, with ShipStation, we get up to 84% off USPS and UPS rates. Automate your shipping with ShipStation. Go to ShipStation.com/audio for a free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, news brief time on CBS Sports Radio. So Aaron Rodgers going to play in the Jets' final preseason game and make his Jets debut up against the Giants. Robert Saleh, why he's not worried about playing Aaron Rodgers in the final preseason game.
You can't coach scared. You can't play scared. You can slip out of your car and have something happen to you. But, you know, we'll be, knock on wood, everyone will be fine. You know, you see some of the great ones out there. You know, Kansas City's playing their guys. Buffalo's playing their guys. It's not uncommon. You know, you could always play the hindsight game or the fearful game, but what's in the best interest for our team is to go out there and play some football together.
Usually preseason games mean nothing. I think this is Aaron Rodgers playing to the Jet fan. Oh, I want to go throw a touchdown pass up against the Giants. I think this is stupid. This has been such a great offseason for the Jets and such a positive offseason for the Jets. It would be so same old Jet where Rodgers somehow gets hurt in this game up against the Giants. I don't think there's any benefit to playing Aaron Rodgers. And if Aaron Rodgers wants to make a point up against the Giants, you could do that in week 8. I don't think there's any need to play Aaron Rodgers in this game. I would not do it. Probably nothing will happen. But I would just get to the regular season at this point if I'm the Jets. Here's Shane Steichen, the coach of the Colts, who says Jonathan Taylor's future won't be a distraction. Now the Colts have given Jonathan Taylor permission to seek a trade.
Aware of obviously the reports with JT, but my focus right now is on this football team, these joint practices, and these guys ready to play.
What the heck did he just say? I couldn't hear a single word he just said with that audio.
He said that he's aware of JT's stories, but he's focused on getting the Colts ready to play in this upcoming preseason game.
Good response by Shane Steichen. Don't give anything more than what you need to give there. And that was all you needed to give. Ron Rivera, talking about a coach that sometimes gives too much, says Sam Howell is playing like a franchise QB.
Well, I thought he handled that extremely well. I did. You know, there's a lot of pressure, obviously, and we know how important the quarterback position is in the league and how important it is, you know, in this area. You know, that we've been looking for one, and I think we have an opportunity to have a guy that has a chance to be a really good football player for us.
And let's hear from that man, Sam Howell. He says the Commander's offense is loaded.
Yeah, I mean, we have so many weapons. And, you know, we have, and you said seven guys, but we have 20 guys. You know, obviously hope we can't, probably can't keep them all, but we have so many guys that can make plays with the ball when they get their chance. So all I try to do is just try to get the ball out of my hands as quickly as possible and give those guys a chance to do what they do best. And I'm just so blessed with the talent I have around me for sure.
Now, I'm not saying that Sam Howell should have ever been the first overall pick in the draft, but there was a time where going into a season, he's projected to be the number one overall pick, and then he goes back to UNC, right? And he didn't have his two running backs and his two wide receivers, and then he falls all the way to the fifth round. I'm not saying Howell will ever be as good as a number one overall pick, but I don't think he was as bad of a quarterback as it would suggest for a quarterback going in the fifth round. He seems like a second or third round type of guy, and those guys could go on to have very successful careers in the NFL. I'm just curious to see what he could do. I think the Commanders could be a good team this year. I think they just need him to be a game manager. And I'm very curious to see what Sam Howell brings to a football team this year. John Harbaugh reacts to the dumbest win streak in the history of sports. That's the 24-game preseason win streak for the Baltimore Ravens that came to an end last night at the hands of the Washington Commanders.
And I just told our guys, you know, you're proud of it, of course. Huh. You know, you appreciate it. But the thing that you're proud of is all those games are mostly just like that. You know, preseason games that people want to write about, some of you in here want to write about and say they don't mean anything. Because you never played the game. You never were out there in a preseason game. You never were fighting for a spot on a team. And yet you have the audacity to say that the effort that somebody puts into that to win and fight and win a game like that is meaningless. Tell me that was meaningless out there, what you just saw. If you like football, is that a meaningless football game? You know, I can't respect anybody that says that because of the effort these guys put into it. That's what you're proud of. And that's why I'm so proud of these guys for the way they fought. It doesn't matter win or loss. It matters the way they went about their business tonight. And I'm proud of him for that, always will be.
What is he? He's exactly right. It doesn't matter if you win or lose. So why do you need the verbal diarrhea in the first 50 seconds of that, John Harbaugh? Like, what are we doing there? There's a difference in appreciating an effort to go make a team, but people throwing, and I think a lot of it is in sarcasm, this parade, like, oh, they won 24 games a row in the preseason. The coach even said it doesn't matter if you win or lose. So, Hickey, that makes no sense to me. Why he just went on a fiery rant there. Stop it.
I like it. You nerds.
You suck.
Get back in your mother's basement if you say the preseason doesn't matter. That matters. He's about to cry on the podium losing a 24-game win streak. I love it.
Oh, jeez. Finally, here is D'Amico Ryan saying he won't name a starting QB until week one.
We'll have a starter in Baltimore. It's the same as I said previously. You guys will see the starter when we get to Baltimore.
This is a giant waste of time. Ready? We're going to say it on three, Hickey. The starting quarterback of the Houston Texans come week one will be 1, 2, 3,
CJ Stroud.
Why do we have to do this whole song and dance here? Guy was the second overall pick in the draft. And now all of a sudden, we're going to need to see Davis Mills? What are we doing?
He did have a strong last game, though, last year.
Up.
He went into the offseason with a lot of momentum.
Oh, shut up. Please. You know me, and you have grown accustomed to this throughout the years. If you have a young quarterback and the young quarterback is ready and there's no one there to prevent him from getting on the field, you play the young quarterback. Ask the Steelers how it worked out last year with Mitch Trubisky playing him for the first few games. and the Texans, if they have to put Davis Mills out there for the first few games, it's a giant waste of time. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. One of the best sideline reporters in the business, NFL and CBS's very own Evan Washburn, will join us on the other side.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, we continue. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Football season is approaching, so let's go out to the hotline right now and welcome in one of the great sideline reporters for the NFL on CBS, and that, of course, is our pal, Evan Washburn. Evan, how you been?
I'm doing well, Zach. How are you, man?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. So I actually saw you the other day filling in on Inside College Football. You sitting next to Brian Jones was some sight with your luscious locks and then the big burly beard from on Brian Jones. Who has the better hair? Is it what's on top of your cabeza or what's on Brian Jones's cheeks?
Wow, you're bringing the hard questions right out of the gate. I'm going to stick with my hair based off of longevity. I mean, Brian's been rocking that beard for a few years now, but I've known him before the beard, and he didn't know me before the hair. But I can't believe you walked out of that show or watching that without being more floored by his jacket as opposed to his chin lettuce.
Yeah, what was that, a teal jacket yesterday for Brian Jones? I remember watching it during a break, and I said, okay, BJ's making a statement to start the year.
He can pull off jackets that we can only dream of.
100%. I would not have that fashion style. Evan Washburn here with us. So the big NFL news yesterday, Jonathan Taylor has been given permission to seek a trade. The Colts a few weeks ago, when he requested that trade, said that we're not trading him before the season or during the season. Were you surprised to see that they have now given him permission to seek a trade?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, this feels, unfortunately, like a lot of situations contractually over the years, and obviously it's heightened because of all the discussion about the running back position as a whole, but this feels in a lot of ways like the organization, similar to what Baltimore did with Lamar Jackson. Now, that obviously worked out for everybody, but hey, here, go test the market. See what you can get, because I have to imagine they feel pretty confident, at least Chris Ballard does, that there's not going to be the return that they're looking for from in terms of a compensation in a trade, and then the long-term deal that a team would have to then agree to Jonathan before making the trade. So to me, it feels like, hey, go see what's out there. We think you're going to be disappointed by it, and maybe that allows you to come back to us and feel better about our situation.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Austin Eckler situation, because they gave him permission to seek a trade, and Austin has said this to me on this show. It's kind of funny that they wanted a whole lot for him, but then they weren't willing to increase that contract more than what, like $1.75, I think it was, $1 million in incentives. That's what it kind of feels like here, directly to the Austin Eckler situation.
Agreed. And I would think, too, that there's going to be, because they really would, I have to imagine, want to have Jonathan there, Taylor, and maybe this gives them the opportunity to come up with something contractually that they feel good about, and then once he knows the market, he can begrudgingly accept.
I kind of threw this number out there yesterday, and I'd be curious if it gets it done. If they give him like $14 million a year over 4 years, but only give like the guarantee about $25, $26 million, so easy to probably get out of after 2 years, do you think that's enough, or is it going to be one of those things where Jonathan Taylor wants more than Christian McCaffrey money?
Wow. I mean, I'm sure he would want it. I just don't see how that in the current marketplace is something that's close to realistic. I mean, your numbers sound good. I haven't grinded on exactly where they stand in their cap. And then also with maybe what he's made clear is something that he'd be acceptable to him. To me, it seems beyond even just the money in the moment. It's the security and some of that long-term feel that you get with a deal that obviously teams aren't interested in right now.
And like we're saying, Evan Washburn, running backs really have no leverage. Nick Chubb even said it after that meeting that they had a few weeks back, that there's really nothing we can do right now, speaking from a running back perspective. Most likely, right when the season starts and when the season ends, you think Jonathan Taylor will be on the Indianapolis Colts and he doesn't get dealt?
I do. I think he's too smart to not recognize the importance of, one, playing this year and accruing that season, but also making the money that he is guaranteed. And I think it still seems like there's hope to, in those last days before the season, where sometimes we will see deals get done, that the Colts can find a way to give him something to make him feel like this was not all for naught. And then he's not a frustrated player returning, because at any position, really, but especially running back, where it's such a grind and a beatdown for those guys, you don't want somebody that's not pleased, kind of having to line up week in and week out.
Evan Washburn here with us. Are you buying in on all the hype surrounding the Jets? It seems like nothing could go wrong right now for Gangreen.
I'm cautiously optimistic. I hope it works out, because I think it'd be great. It'd be fun to see that organization, that team up there with the best in the AFC. But it's finally starting to be brought to light, largely based off of what we've seen in joint practices and Aaron Rodgers lending words to it. But if you don't have an offensive line that can protect, it doesn't matter. And if they can't open holes for their multitude of running backs they got going on right now, it doesn't matter. So that needs to get cleaned up. They're not going to all of a sudden overnight become the Eagles O-line or the Colts O-line, for that, going back to Taylor's situation. But I do think that there's reasons to obviously be hopeful if you're a Jets fan, because there's just so many pieces around them, and they seem to be embracing one another in a good way.
You do a great job each and every Sunday giving us stories on the NFL on CBS broadcast with the phenomenal booth and team that you're a part of. Is there a bigger story this year entering the season than the Jets? Because I know it's not just only Hard Knocks, but with the Rodgers storyline the last few years, it feels like they are the biggest story entering this season.
No, I don't think to start the year right now there's a bigger story, but I just think, to me, what I keep going back to is just the AFC as a whole.
Yeah.
And I just can't remember in my now 10 years doing this, of a year where it's just this loaded, and there's going to be good teams, good quarterbacks left out of the postseason, and that's just not usually the case.
You look at a team like Buffalo, a year ago, if we were talking Evan Washburn, everyone's picking them to not only get to the Super Bowl, but win the Super Bowl. I think everyone right now says they're a good team, but with how last year did play out in that divisional round and a very performance on wild card weekend against Skylar Thompson, people are starting to doubt Buffalo. I'm just fascinated. I was talking about this the other night, what we see from the Bills this year, because now they were the pick last year. People are starting to doubt them. And when you have a moment of adversity like that, I'm just curious to see how they come out swinging.
I'm bullish on the Bills, Zach. I think being a prisoner to that one game, it's the last game you saw them, it was ugly. But what they went through in the back quarter, but really the back half of that season, not just the DeMar Hamlin thing, which is separate to it all in terms of life and literally death on the field, but the injuries they had, the Micah Hyde injury, the Von Miller injury, they were banged up. And then Josh Allen got hurt in that Jet game. So I just think that they've come back fully healthy and improved in some areas, not shiny star ones like the Jets, obviously. But that team, to me, has some scar tissue that I think will benefit them this year. And much like I am with the Bengals, I just think that if you've been hanging around the party, and by party, I mean a Super Bowl and winning that thing the last few years, I like when you've had that experience, even if it's ended in disappointment, because I think it puts you in the proper perspective heading into the year.
And I think most people right now would say it's the Chiefs 1 in the AFC, it's the Bengals 2. But then that third spot is open for debate a little bit. Do you still think it's Buffalo when you say you're bullish on them, that they're still clearly, in your mind, a top three team in the AFC?
No doubt. I like the idea of it still being Kansas City, Cincinnati, and Buffalo, and then the rest of the teams you need to show us over the first few weeks of the season, really the first 6 weeks of the season, whether you're Baltimore, whether you're the Jets, whether you're the Chargers. Are we going to see a bounce back from the Broncos, from obviously Jacksonville now in the conversation? Those are the teams that we need to see what you're going to do the first 6 weeks for me to feel comfortable putting you in that group of three that I still feel have separated themselves going into the year.
Evan Washburn here with us. What are your expectations? I know it's not year one, but it's his first true year as a starter for Jordan Love, replacing Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay.
I just want my expectations are tempered. It's show that you're competent, that you can do this job, not to the level of Aaron Rodgers. That seems to be ridiculous. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback. But show that you're somebody that they can at least feel comfortable giving the keys to for the next 2-3 years. I know they've signed him through this year, and there's a lot of sort of a prove-it situation for him. But show that you feel comfortable moving forward and you're not immediately hopping into the next draft cycle looking for a signal caller. And that, to me, would be a win. And then just incremental improvement from there, and you're looking at a positive situation. And then the hope is, after maybe a couple years of banked experience, that you're Jalen Hurts. And it's one of those things where he improved more than I've seen a quarterback improve over the course of his first 3 years in the league. And I think that's what you would want from somebody like Jordan Love.
When you examine that NFC North, a lot of people say the Lions are the favorite to win that division. I still go with the Minnesota Vikings. I think the Vikings will regress from 13 wins a year ago, but I still got to see more out of Detroit. Where is the Evan Washburn belief level with the Lions?
I think I want it to go well. So just for that fan base, and I think it would be good for the league to have them relevant in a real way. And look, there's no secret. They're a fun team to cover, to watch, because of Dan Campbell's personality and some of the players they have. Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think, is an absolute star. So I think the hope is that the Lions can live up to the expectations of being the debut team along with the Chiefs. And that's not done out of just randomness. So I'm with you. I think the Vikings will be right where they were a year ago, maybe not with the fortune that they had down the stretch in a lot of those games. But to me, it's a Lions-Vikings division.
Evan Washburn, I know 2 weeks ago I saw an interview you did with Mac Jones. What type of year does Mac Jones have this season? Because I asked for two things this offseason: go get a legit offensive coordinator. They did that. And then also a number one wide receiver. I know they brought in Juju Smith-Schuster, but I don't view him as a number one. Do they have enough at wide receiver for Mac Jones to bounce back this season?
Well, I think they have enough for him to bounce back as a team, and much of that's just having some real professionalism at the signal caller, play caller position, and somebody that's experienced doing it at a high level in Bill O'Brien, and just sort of settled things down. I can't sit here and say that their pass catchers, their wide receivers, really threaten you the way a lot of the other guys in that division and in the AFC do. So that's concerning if you're Mac Jones. But I just think they're going to play a brand of football that isn't going to lean on explosive guys on the outside separating. They're going to need some of that at times, because you can't just be ground and pound. But it's clear the way they're built right now and how good their defense is going to be, this is Bill Belichick continuing to zag against the league with how this team is built.
Two more with Evan Washburn, NFL on CBS. Does a great job on the sidelines. Broncos or Browns, who do you believe in more for this upcoming year with both those quarterbacks?
Wow, that's a good one. I think Browns, based off of just how much talent they have, it's such a mystery right now, because we have no idea what version of Deshaun Watson we're going to get. But if they were to click in any sort of way, that team's not just built to be better than the Broncos. They're built to win the AFC North and really make a run at it. I mean, they have that much talent when you spend time at training camp and then just kind of going through their two deep. But they, to me, seem like a group that's still searching for a true identity. And look, I think the Broncos will be better. I think Sean Payton will get the most out of Russell Wilson. But what is that right now? I think there's more question marks around the Broncos, even though there's obvious depth with Cleveland.
And then last thing I'll ask you here, Evan Washburn, in the NFC, we know the Eagles are one, and then in at number two, it's the 49ers. Who's the third best team, in your opinion, on paper in the NFC?
I like Seattle.
They're going to
be a team that's going to really fly under the radar early in the year, and then I think they're going to be there with San Francisco, obviously, in that division. And then Philadelphia. I like what they're building. I think Geno Smith, that wasn't just a flash in the pan kind of season. That was something that they can build on. And then hopefully this Jackson Smith and Jigba injury isn't something that lingers, because he clearly is a star ready to break out, much like Garrett Wilson did a year ago.
So to me, it's Seattle is somebody we're not talking enough about. And then maybe Atlanta. They seem to also be a sexy pick.
Wow. See, I think Atlanta, and we're in some line of thinking here, I think Atlanta will win that division. And I know the NFC is not that talented, but be the third best team in the NFC, that would really be something with the Falcons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, look, this is a real long shot, if you will.
Yeah.
But I just think that they're sometimes your road can make you the third best team. I mean, we've seen in the AFC, the Titans have been the top seed in years where we didn't maybe feel they were the best team. And look, maybe that was proven out with their playoff performances. But just based off of the environment you have to work through week in and week out, and as you mentioned in that division that seems to be the worst in the NFL this year, I think that could set up nicely.
Evan Washburn, NFL on CBS. Always appreciate the time and the insight. We'll do it again soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
There he is, Evan Washburn, NFL on CBS. Does a great job on the sidelines with the broadcast booth of Ian Eagle and also Charles Davis. And that's all the time that we do have today on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Also like to thank Merrill Hodge for joining us earlier in the program, and also my producer extraordinaire, Hot Take Hickey. You could always give me a follow on Instagram and Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. All righty, appreciate you all for listening. We will be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. Major guest alert for a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show. Primetime will be in the house. The head football coach at Colorado, Deion Sanders, will be stopping by. Always enjoy our conversations with Primetime. All righty, we out. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Bye-bye. Peace.
I'm a sushi chef. I also happen to be a cat. How'd I get here? Adobe Photoshop. It turned a cute kitty like me into a sashimi master. And it can make your images look amazing, too. In just a few clicks, you can replace a boring background, swap out a so-so sky, and remove distractions like people and power lines. With Photoshop, everyone can. I love playing with this mouse. Click or tap the banner to visit Photoshop.com and pounce on your free trial today.